This is Crossings Radio. I'm Ida Harden.
And I'm Olivia Sanchez.
And we're here with UNESCO's Chief of Media Services, George Papianis, at UNESCO headquarters in Paris, France.
George has been at UNESCO for more than 12 years, but before that, he had a long career in journalism. Today we, both Crossings student research fellows and aspiring journalists, will talk to George about the nature of working in multiple cultures, being a father and reporting in conflict zones, and his major career shift from journalism to diplomacy.
Let's get started. George, you grew up in Chelsea, New York. So was radio your main source of news when you were growing up?
The radio was always on in the house. And it was both radio stations speaking in English and radio stations speaking in Greek, because my dad was from Greece, and we had learned Greek from very early on, and my sister and I were also attending bilingual school. And as a kid, I was also one of those kids who loved to have the experience of AM skip. Now, I don't know if you know what that is, but in certain atmospheric conditions, an AM radio signal can skip across the horizon, essentially. And you can start to hear radio stations from other cities. So I would hear Detroit in New York, St. Louis, WBZ in Boston. In Detroit, I think it was KMOX. So I'd be there in bed at night with my little transistor radio, and I'd be adjusting that dial, you know, up and down, looking for a station that I didn't recognize. And then all of a sudden, you'd strike gold. And that was it. Put it by the side of my pillow, and I was in heaven.
So when it came time for you to apply to college, you were set on journalism. You wanted to be a broadcast reporter.
Well, now you're getting into a bit of family dynamics. I think that for my father, he thought I should go into something more business-like. And so I ended up going to Boston University, initially into the College of Liberal Arts, but then my dad was kind of pushing me to get into the management program. And I tried it for about a semester, and I was, ready to start pulling out my fingernails. And so we had a conversation, and I said, really what I'd like to do is something that I feel very passionate about, and I want to do journalism. Boston University had an excellent program, the School of Public Communications at that time. And I decided, I got my father to agree, and I think my mom was already there. She knew that I was somebody who always just wanted to interact with people in a way that I could learn about them and find out what made them tick and why they were who they were. And so that's what happened. I worked with some really wonderful people, in particular, Blaine Littell, who was something of a mentor to me. He had worked in early broadcasting, with some of the greats like Edward R. Murrow, and I really learned a lot from him.
So shortly after graduating, you covered the race riots in Lawrence, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
What was that like?
That was probably one of my first experiences, I think, in a conflict, really. I mean, when you have rioting, you have conflict. It was a confrontation between the Latino community in Lawrence, Massachusetts, and the Anglo community from the city, but in a very poor part of the city, and people who probably had a lot more in common than they realized, especially in terms of their personal struggles in order to to make ends meet. It was a situation where I think there was, people feeling that other people were taking away what could be theirs. And I was the kind of news reporter who made contact with people who were important to me being able to do my job. And one of them was a lieutenant in the local police department. He gave me a call, and he was a crusty Irishman, I have to say. I can only probably tell you half of what he said, because the other half was all curse words. And it was about me not being there where all of this was happening. What are you still doing in the office? Why aren't you in Lawrence? There's a riot going on. I can't believe you're still there. And so I said, thanks, Lieutenant. I'm on my way. And I had only been in Lawrence a few times to cover meetings, and jumped in my little Toyota Corolla and got on the highway. It was late at night, probably around 9:30, 10 o'clock. The highway was completely pitch dark. And all of a sudden, I see this blue light in my rearview mirror. And I'm speeding as much as a Toyota Corolla can speed on the highway. And I think to myself, okay, one of two things is going to happen. He's going to pull me over and give me a ticket, at which point I could say, could you direct me to the riot, sir? Or he's going to go right past me. Well, he came up so fast that when I almost didn't have time to pull out of the lane. And when he went past, it was like being pulled into the wake of the back of his cruiser. He was going so fast, and those lights began to get so small in that darkness. And I'm like egging on my little Toyota Corolla. And so the last thing I could see was him turning somewhere in the distance. And I figured when I get there, I'll know what to do. I took the exit, got off the exit ramp, and almost went broadside into an ambulance. And so, you know, screeching the brakes, the ambulance just keeps on going. And I thought to myself, he's going to the riots. And I pulled in right behind the ambulance, and he drove me right into the middle of the melee. And there I was, doing my reporting, trying to get it from both sides, too. I mean, I tried to mix and move around. And actually, there were multiple sides. I mean, you had the two communities that were at odds with each other, but you also had the police who were trying to contain the violence. It was, on the first night, quite violent with shooting, and a couple of people were hit with buckshot standing next to me while I was trying to get a view on what was happening, and had to pull those people back and make sure that they were okay, and then get back to my reporting. And so it went on for several days. And as I said, what I tried to do was I wanted to make sure that people could hear all the sides as much as possible, and stopping to interview people. And it's kind of hard when, you know, you see a guy walk over to a fence and literally almost rip the fence out of the ground. And while he's standing with two pieces of wood, I stick my microphone in his face. And I say, well, could you tell me why you just did that and what you're doing? And momentarily seeing him look me in the eyes, and I thought he was just going to box my ears with those two pieces of wood. Then he just starts to talk. You know, you fall in love with the capacity to be a vehicle within the construct of what is journalism, which means ensuring that you're doing your utmost every time you turn on the microphone, or you pull out your notepad, or you turn on a camera, that you're trying to get as many of those facets so that people have a well-rounded view. And you are a storyteller who wraps around a narrative with verifiable information, the facts.
So you have a very good insight now, given the time in between when these events were happening. But I wonder if you could go back and give your younger self some advice, what it would be.
What advice would I give my younger self? You know, this may not be the answer to the question, but I threw myself into my work completely. And I think as I reflect on those days and the commitment to work and the long hours, that I gave everything to my job and not enough to my family. And so if I had something to tell my younger self, it might be to try to be more cognizant of the importance of that.
So can you talk a little bit about what you were doing when you decided to apply to work at UNESCO?
I was living in the Chadian desert when I decided to apply. I was living in eastern Chad. I was working for a non-governmental organization, an NGO. I was building a three-station community radio network that was designed to broadcast humanitarian news and information to the local Chadian population, but specifically to the Darfur refugees in the camps. So there were about 250,000 refugees, and memory serves me, we had about 9 different camps, and those camps were spread all along the Chad-Sudan border in Chad. And so my job was to essentially get those up and running and to train a local staff, many of whom had no real particular skill set that they had achieved. Some had only been educated in elementary school or perhaps early, middle school or high school, and get them to do storytelling, communicating important information. And I consider that to be one of the most important years of my professional life, if not the most important. As a radio reporter, I was a part of the community that I worked in. I talked to them every day, reported on things. I kept them informed. And here I was doing the same thing, but now in a crisis situation. I mean, this was the result of a horrible conflict, and people had come across the border. They had suffered incredible horrors. Men and boys had been killed in front of their wives and mothers. Women had been raped as a weapon of war. There were consequences for that, and there were a whole range of issues that had to be addressed, and also the fact that all of a sudden you had 250,000 people in a barren area with very little resources on the doorstep of little communities that were in Chad that were then having a lot of burden, and there was a real impact on the limited resources that already existed. So this was a very, very important way of keeping the peace between those two communities and also to essentially ensure that people were well informed on both sides.
Were you hesitant at all about the career shift, like leaving journalism?
Well, I never left journalism, even when I came to UNESCO. The journalism that I did in Chad was part of a media development organization. I had trained journalists. I wasn't doing day-to-day journalism, but I was involved in journalism. And in Chad, I was responsible for the newsrooms that were going to be producing the various news reports that would be going out. When I came here, I was working in the communication and information sector, here being, of course, at UNESCO. So I continued within that context.
So both you and your wife have worked in journalism. Does journalism and the news sort of dominate conversation at the dinner table?
It doesn't dominate, but it's a part of conversation every day. It's part of something that we both care very deeply about.
So if you have a busy day ahead of you, say you only have 5 minutes to read the news, what are the topics that are most important to you to check in on?
The topics most important for me are international news, because that's important for me for my job in terms of ensuring that things that are happening are not necessarily going to have either an impact or potentially require that UNESCO be involved in some way. So I'm scanning that. We also have a daily news digest that we produce. So that allows me also to look at, you know, smaller press, you know, for example, from Cote d'Ivoire or from Asia, from Latin America. I start the morning usually with that feed and see what's happening and where UNESCO is in the press. That's like the first thing I do in the morning.
So, George, it sounds like throughout your entire career, your work has been high stakes and high pressure. And before you mentioned struggling to find a good work-life balance, I wonder now, how do you draw a line between personal and professional?
It's still a struggle, I have to say. I take ownership of the things that I do, and so I want to make sure that I give it my all. My work does incorporate, you know, last-minute requests that are urgent. That kind of takes you off your task, pushes you onto a different road for a while, and then you got to bring yourself back. That's hours sitting in front of a computer sometimes, where I'd rather at times be home having a conversation with my wife or being at the movies. So I'm working on it.
So say you have a weekend off, you're going to unplug completely. What do you do?
I like to go out. My wife and I enjoy a good meal out. We try to do that at least once a week if we can. We have a weekend to go away. You know, we'll try to get out. Sometimes we go with our bikes, put them on the train, go someplace close. The nice thing about Paris is that you don't have to go too far out of Paris to find countryside.
Being a bike enthusiast, what kind of bike did you ride growing up?
Ooh, I had a number of bikes because they were routinely stolen. And so I had a Peugeot, which was my favorite. I always rode racers. And this actually goes back to my grandfather, my mom's dad. My mom's dad loved bicycling, and he loved bike racing. And so he used to take me to a velodrome in Queens.
Oh.
And we would go out to this velodrome, which was in the middle of a field. I mean, it's hard to believe. I mean, but this is the 1960s. I mean, I was a little kid. And I remember these experiences vividly. We would take two buses, and we'd get out to this field. And then you'd have to walk through a dirt path through the field. And then all of a sudden, there was this velodrome. Maybe it was more evident to my grandfather because he was taller and I couldn't really see. But there was like this little depression. And then there was this place with bleachers. And then we would kind of walk down this little hillside. And my grandfather's grip on my hand would get like tighter and tighter as he was getting more and more excited that we were getting closer and closer. And so we would go down, and these guys would be racing. And I have such vivid memories of, you know, the starter's gun, the coach holding the back seat of the bicyclist while he was perched, ready to pump out, you know, every ounce of strength that his muscles could produce. And then the sound of that whiz as they would come around. They'd come around, one right after the other, get that whoosh, 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 whoosh. It was just incredible. So I had racers, you know, ram's horn, get down low. I can tell you where all the hills are in Manhattan, when you have to really get down to low gear. My favorite place to ride was down Fifth Avenue from the main library. You go down from 42nd Street and you could really coast and get up to traffic light speed. So you were in with the traffic. And while my mother would cringe if she could hear me, one of my favorite things was to then take a lane, not to be on the side, but to pull a lane and work that lane and stay up and force the cars to respect me in that lane.
Wow. Well, George, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you joining us here.
Yeah, I think we can all learn a lot from both your stories and the way you told them.
Well, thank you guys. And I want to thank the two of you. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm Ida Harden.
And I'm Olivia Sanchez.
With UNESCO Chief of Media Services, George Papianis.
You've been listening to Crossings Radio, a production of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute for Intercultural Dialogue and Conflict-Sensitive Reporting.